Today's podcast is brought to you by Newspapers.com, the ultimate destination for exploring the mysteries of the past. If you're fascinated by true crime, get ready to dive into the stories that made headlines. Newspapers.com offers a billion pages of historical newspapers from the U.S. and beyond, and you can search the entire collection in seconds. Their vast newspaper collection is a goldmine for eyewitness accounts, crime scene photos, news reports, and more. Whether you're interested in famous crimes or long-forgotten cases, Newspapers.com gives you a front-row seat to more than 300 years of history. For our listeners, Newspapers.com has a special offer. Use the code CUPOFMURDER for an exclusive 20% discount on your subscription. That's promo code CUPOFMURDER at Newspapers.com. Sign up today and start unraveling the true crime mysteries that keep you up at night. Did you know nearly 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about? Do you think you are part of that 75%? I really didn't think that I would be, but when asked to list out all the subscriptions I paid for, one or two slipped through the cracks that I totally forgot about, one of which was for something that I swore I canceled forever ago. Think about it. Between streaming platforms, apps, delivery services, and even parenting/kid subscriptions, though they all seem like small amounts, when pulled together, that's a pretty big chunk of your spending money out the door. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting time on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/morningcup. That's rocketmoney.com/morningcup. rocketmoney.com/morningcup.
There were two more murders 15 miles away.
When police arrived, they found the telephones and electricity lines.
We have a weird homicide.
A scene described by one investigator as reminiscent of a weird...
Morning. Cup of murder.
It's a wonderful thing to leave a mark on this planet that will last long after you are gone. One hopes, however, that it doesn't take losing your life to do so. On March 5th, 1985, a man's body was found after having suffered tremendously at the hands of a group of men who wanted him dead. A man who, in death, left a lasting impression that can be felt and recognized all throughout the nation each and every year. So if you like your coffee hot but your bones chilled, sit back and start your day with a morning cup of murder. Enrique Camarena Salazar, known as Kiki to everyone in his life, was born on July 26, 1947, in the border city of Mexicali, Mexico. When he was still very young, Kiki, his three brothers, three sisters, and parents moved to Calexico, California. But sometime around this time period, his parents divorced, and he found himself living in considerable poverty. Then in 1965, his family suffered a devastating blow when his oldest brother, Eduardo, joined the Marines and was killed while serving in Vietnam. His other brother, Ernesto, got in trouble with drugs and law enforcement, but despite all the hardships, Kiki managed to keep his nose in the books and graduate from high school in 1966. Shortly after getting his diploma, Kiki followed in his brother's footsteps and joined the Marines. Discharged in 1970, he returned to Calexico and decided to join the police department. From there, he excelled and started work in undercover narcotics as a special agent on the Imperial County Narcotics Task Force. After the DEA was established in 1973, they went searching for Spanish-speaking agents, and both Kiki and his sister Mirna decided to join. A special agent in the DEA's Calexico Resident Office, in 1977, Kiki was transferred to the Fresno Field Office, where he worked undercover on the smuggling activities taking place in the San Joaquin Valley. According to author Elaine Shannon, Kiki's success on the job was abundantly clear. He could, quote, slip effortlessly into a Puerto Rican accent or toss off Mexican gutter slang, whatever the role demanded, and colleagues described him as incredibly driven, even by the standards of the most seasoned DEA agents. Which is why, in 1980, a colleague and close friend who had just moved to the resident office in Guadalajara recommended that Kiki apply for an assignment in that office. An important advancement, Kiki, who had a wife and three sons at the time, was given the foreign assignment and began work in a place that was on the precipice of an explosion in drug trafficking. Now in Mexico, under the president at the time, José López Portillo, the aerial spotting and eradication endorsed by the man before him was curtailed. And with America's participation in the activities ending in 1978, it was becoming easier for drug producers to build large plantations that were not discovered until later in the 1980s. Not to mention the fact that, during the late 1970s and early 80s, cocaine trafficking by Colombian smugglers had grown so rapidly in the U.S. and drew most of the attention of the DEA, allowing Mexico to kind of be shoved to the side. Basically, by the time Enrique Camarena Salazar arrived in the area, the drug trade was growing rapidly and, unchecked, was becoming more and more dangerous. Then there was the change that occurred during Kiki's 4.5 years in Guadalajara, when the major traffickers started to climb the ranks and fill the void created when most of the head honchos were either killed or arrested in the 1970s. The best known being Miguel Angel Felix Gallardo, Ernesto Fonseca Carrillo, and Rafael Caro Quintero, who often coordinated the production and operations, making up what is called the Guadalajara Cartel. Working primarily in locating these plantations, which used improved techniques that provided more powerful and higher quality products, Kiki and his fellow agents, unable to fly overhead and look for the fields, concentrated their efforts in finding informants who were willing to put their lives on the line by snitching. A job that, by all accounts, Kiki was incredible at doing. Working with a man they called Miguel Sanchez, Kiki was able to lead the agents to one of the new style plantations in 1982, which, according to the informant, was financed by cartel member Juan José Esparragoza Moreno. The area was raided in September of 1982 and was found to cover over 200 acres with hundreds of growers employed to tend the plants. Destroying over 4,000 tons of marijuana, this became the largest plantation discovered by the agency at the time, a bust that would not have happened if it weren't for Kiki and his work with the informant. For more than 4 years, Kiki worked tirelessly and trailed the country's biggest drug traffickers. And in early 1985, he was hot on the trail and just moments away from unlocking a multi-billion dollar drug pipeline when, just before he could expose the operations to the public, he was kidnapped on February 7th, 1985, while out having lunch with his wife. Surrounded by 5 grown men, Kiki was grabbed, thrown into a waiting car, and driven away in what would be the last time anyone but the kidnappers saw the agent alive again. Taken to a residence in Jardines del Bosque, owned by Rafael Caro Quintero, Kiki was tortured over the course of 30 hours before having his skull punctured by a piece of rebar. Ribs broken and bruised all over, his body was found wrapped up in plastic just outside a small town on March 5th, 1985. Reacting quickly to the murder of a beloved and accomplished agent, the DEA launched Operation Leyenda, Operation Legend, which would, at its completion, be the largest DEA homicide investigation ever undertaken. A special unit was dispatched to investigate in Mexico, where the actual government officials were, according to rumor, being implicated in the crime. Amongst those named were Manuel Ibarra Herrera, the past director of the Mexican Federal Judicial Police, and Miguel Aldana Ibarra, the former director of Interpol in Mexico. Men who, unable to get their hands dirty, allegedly hired Miguel Angel Felix Gallardo, Ernesto Fonseca Carrillo, and Rafael Caro Quintero, the cartel, to do the job for them. Under pressure of the U.S. government, the Mexican president quickly apprehended Ernesto and Rafael, but Miguel remained under political protection. The DEA, due to the difficulty in extraditing Mexican citizens, detained 2 other suspects, Humberto Alvarez Machain, the physician who allegedly kept Kiki alive so the torture could last longer, and Javier Vasquez Velasco, who were both taken by bounty hunters into the U.S. Despite protests from the Mexican government, Humberto Alvarez Machain was brought to trial in 1992, but the judge in the end ruled that there was not enough evidence to support a guilty verdict, and he was released. He later initiated a civil suit against the U.S. government, claiming that his arrest had breached the U.S.-Mexico extradition treaty. Though it reached the Supreme Court, it was ruled that he was not entitled to any relief. Then came the trials of Javier Vasquez Velasco, Juan Ramon Mata Ballesteros, Juan José Bernabe Ramirez, and Ruben Zono Arce, the brother-in-law of former Mexican president Luis Echeverria, who allegedly destroyed evidence, who were all tried and found guilty of Kiki's kidnapping, and at some point, Miguel Angel Felix Gallardo, Ernesto Fonseca of Carrillo, and Rafael Caro Quintero were all found guilty as well. With trial numbers that reached the double digits, the case continues to trouble the U.S.-Mexican relations, especially when Rafael was released in prison in 2013 and was, in 2022, recaptured. Since their convictions, there have been a lot of rumblings about a potentially shoddy trial and the entire thing being a CIA cover-up. No official claims have been made, though, and if the murder was truly perpetrated by the CIA, I doubt one will ever be made. In the aftermath of his devastating murder, Enrique Kiki Camarena Salazar was featured on Time magazine's cover, received a number of awards from the DEA, and was posthumously given the Administrator's Award of Honor, the highest award given by the organization. A memorial golf tournament is held in his honor every year in Fresno, a scholarship is given to high school seniors, and a school, library, and street in Calexico are all named after him, along with another school in Mission, Texas. Red Ribbon Week started in 1985 in his hometown to honor his sacrifice, and soon, the event spread throughout the entire country. Thank you for joining me in my morning cup of murder. Please join me again tomorrow to hear a terrible thing happened on March 6th. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and let me know how you like it. If you want to help support the podcast, there is always Patreon or just sharing it with your true crime obsessed friends. And remember, stay safe.